No, I was just thinking of all the years I've wasted collecting stamps.
Makes a whole lot more sense than collecting statues.
You may be right.
Welcome to Collector's Hangout.
I've spent my entire life doing nothing but collecting comic books. And now there's only time to say... Life well spent!
No treasure in silver and gold, mate.
Hello, collectors and curious minds everywhere. Welcome to another podcast episode of the live streaming show found on our site, collectorshangout.tv, and on YouTube Live. A big thank you to those of you supporting our show. Again, we are 100% viewer and listener supported. More information on how to support us can be found at collectorshangout.tv/support. Now, I've had the privilege of interviewing guests from around the world who were kind enough to showcase their collections and share their passions with me and ultimately with you, our audience. If you're interested in coming on and showcasing what you have and maybe even what you're looking to acquire, let me know. Or maybe you know of someone that would like to showcase their collection. Either way, it's easy to reach out. Simply go to collectorshangout.tv/signup and submit your ideas in the comment section. In this episode, we sit down and talk with Steve and Dave Mapes out of the UK. This is Steve's third time coming to Collectors Hangout and Dave's second. In both of their previous visits, we focus solely on their extensive collections of Transformers. Now, in this episode, like the title says, we turn to focus on their 80s toys collection. They have a whole room of it, in fact, and pictures of all of their toys, some that we actually were able to showcase during the live stream and some that we weren't, can all be seen in the show notes at collectorshangout.tv/ASAP. Now, we not only cover He-Man, Thundercats, Ring Raiders, and Micronauts, but we also focus on their passion for Visionaries, both the toys and the cartoon. We cover toy patents, plastic mold, and for some reason, I can't get the name Mayor McCheese out of my mouth during the discussion. Oh well, enough with the intro. Enjoy Collectors Hangout Podcast, Episode 40, 80s Toys with Dave and Steve Mapes. Steve and Dave Mapes, thank you again for joining us here in Collectors Hangout.
Thank you.
Awesome. So, Dave, you're actually sitting in the room that you all have and you consider your 80s toys room. Tell us a little bit about, you know, how this room is different outside of course, you know, the outright fact that there aren't too many Transformers in this, but tell us a little bit how you came about in starting this collection that you're sitting in front of.
Cool. Well, it all sort of started back just after we left play school, kindergarten, during kindergarten, as you call it in the States. Got back home and our parents bought us some toys, our first action figures that we had, which were He-Man and Skeletor from Masters of the Universe. And our sort of love of toys really spawned on since then. I've actually still got our original He-Man and Battle Cat in front of me. He-Man's seen a few better days. He's got no fingers on his right hand anymore. Both his legs are super glued together, and I think just the right shoulder piece has also been glued together, and there's no strap on his back. Doesn't have any weapons, so really tatty condition. If you saw it in like a flea market, it would probably be like 10 cents or something. But yeah, that was my original, my first ever action figure as a kid.
Okay, so you said that you guys got this, and if you can put it back in front of the camera, that way I can also give a description to our podcast listeners. So this is, of course, is He-Man, and for those that aren't familiar with He-Man, He-Man was a cartoon that was very popular in the early and mid-80s, and it's, you know, featured a Herculean, very muscly, macho, blonde-haired dude, which walked around, you know, wearing just tidy whities, but and a belt with very little armor. And then he had this was it a tiger? I can't remember what kind of animal.
Cringer was a green and yellow tiger.
Then
became a battle cat with like the mask on, which was then meant to sort of almost like represent the type of a lion. Yeah, a bit weird. He could talk in certain bits of the fiction as well, and not in others, which is quite unusual.
I don't remember the talking part, but okay, very cool. So going back to your story on when you guys got these when you were in preschool, did you get the He-Man and Dave, and then did Steve, did you get Skeletor?
I did, and that was actually a pattern that continued through most of our childhood, where I would get the villains, so I guess I'm the evil twin.
Yeah. All right. Now, who again was born first?
Dave.
Dave. Okay, maybe that's why you were the stepchild the twin.
Yeah, because we've still got all of our He-Man, the original toys that we've got are ones that we had from the 80s, and the early figures that we bought, like He-Man, Skeletor, Man-at-Arms, Beastman, they're in pretty bad state. Skeletor, again, both of his legs are glued and his neck is broken, so the head can kind of fall off, which is a little bit freaky really when you think about it. And he's also gone green on his back, which is weird. And they're also from that era where the plastics that we used tend to get a fungus growing on them, not as much as probably the mid-80s. The Thundercats are quite notorious for that, where they get like blue spots and mold growing on them. You have to kind of scrub them off.
I did not know about this. So with the toys that are from the 80s, the plastic that they were using at that point in time, now, you know, 30 plus years later, they're susceptible to mold.
Yes, they tend to get like we used to call them blue spots when we were younger. If they're kept in any sort of like damp condition, or sometimes not even damp conditions, they can get mold growing on them. There's actually a little section in the Science Museum in London that actually talks about different plastics and how they can, different molds that can grow. And I'm trying to remember it, but I can't, because it was several years ago when I went, and I remember reading about it and going like, yeah, I remember that on like some of our He-Man toys and the Thundercats. And sometimes you can scrub them off, but quite often if you go to like a flea market and you pick up a toy from the 80s and the mid 80s and those kind of chunky action figure toys were quite susceptible to them, you'll notice it on there. One of the things we actually noticed with our original Too Bad Master of the Universe figure, he was a character where he had two heads and the arms were like on springs, so they kind of did this. But he's got a blue, I think, base plastic, and then it's kind of painted purple. And our Masters of the Universe toys, because we didn't get rid of them when we were younger, they went into our parents' attics, and then they came back down about 10, 15 years later on, and we had them out for display. Then they went back up in the attic again, and then they came back down. And when I bought this house and we set up the room downstairs, they came out and we gave them all their own cabinet. But the purple dye had actually run over the blue and down the legs, so he actually had two purple legs, which was really weird, but you could just wash it off.
Oh, weird.
But again, it's to do with whatever the material was that was used. I haven't seen too many like that, but the Thundercats were quite susceptible. I think our Mumra probably still has a few kind of mold spots on the back of his head.
Okay. Interesting. I'll have to do some more research on that. And if you can think of, the museum that you had gone to, I'd like to see if I can dig up some information, maybe even connect with the curators over there and see if I could interview them. I'm actually getting more into trying to have curators from museums. So if you guys know of anyone specifically in the toy industry, I'm all ears, especially if they're in the UK, having them on the show.
Well, we'll do. I'll see what I can find.
Awesome. So with the fact that you had
you, Steve, got the villains, and Dave, you got the heroes. Did that pose problems for you guys as you were like growing up and playing with them? I mean, was there jealousy at all for, you know, getting a different character or anything like that between the two of you?
I think it made it easier when we looked at different toy lines when we were buying them, or if our parents would buy us some toys. If it was bad, generally Steve would get it. If it was good, I would get it.
It wasn't always the case. We would swap over. So like the second set of Mars Universe figures we had when our parents bought them for us, again, it was Man at Arms and Beastman. We decided that each one of us would have, like, so I had Man at Arms, Dave had Beastman. So then you'd have like, you know, one goodie, one baddie each as well.
Yeah.
So it kind of changed over. I mean, historically, when we go through different toy lines, like if it's like Transformers, for instance, Optimus Prime was Dave's, Megatron was mine. Thundercats was the same. Yeah, there was a lot when you go through.
It was the same. Dino Riders was opposite, actually.
No, yeah, so was Turtles. But yeah, even Visionaries, which is a big love of ours, Dave had Leoric, who was the leader of the good guys, and I had Darkstorm, who was leader of the villains. So.
Yeah.
Most of the time.
How do we make that? Yeah. Even GoBots and stuff.
Yeah.
Quite weird.
Interesting.
It's our parents' fault.
It's always the parents' fault, eventually, right? No, but now that actually brings us to, obviously, He-Man was what you guys got. Why did your parents choose He-Man for your first action figures toys? Was that one of the few original cartoons that had made its way over the pond to the UK from the United States?
Yeah, I think at that time it was probably what could have been 1983, I guess, or maybe 1982. So there wouldn't have been many other action figures around at that time, especially cartoon related. So He-Man was really sort of credited as being the first real cartoon toy crossover franchise where the cartoon was produced to sort of help sell the toys, which then followed into to G.I. Joe later on, and then Transformers and a lot of other 80s properties later on.
So I think from over this side, yeah, it would have been a case that I don't remember when we started watching Masters of the Universe, but I know it was early on, and I can't remember if it was before we had the toys or after we had the toys. What's sharp in my mind is still coming home and the toys being on the couch in this double pack, and it's probably a case that they just, I know we weren't expecting it at all. So I'm assuming maybe we'd already been watching the series and they went out and bought them. Some of the other toys that we had, like, again, say pre-Transformers, so up to say 83, 84, were toys that you would get from like cereal pack offers.
The weird thing about the Master Universe ones, as Steve said, we came home from Wiggle Play School and our parents had the He-Man Skeletor. We sat down sort of on the floor by the couch, take him out of the box. That's actually my first memory that I have. I have no memories before that moment of being alive. So my first memory is literally going into it, not even going out, sitting on the floor by this couch, getting out He-Man and Skeletor. And I have no memories before that, only after. It's quite bizarre.
That is very interesting. What about you, Steve? I mean, do you have like memories?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm sure he does, because I'm sure he remembers when we moved to that house as well. I remember a little bit of the house that we used to live in before that one. I remember being outside the back door, and I remember the stairs. I remember a wall in a room, just a wall.
That's where you were stuck, playing with bad toys.
Well, at that point, we would have been in a cot, but I remember this wall. And I remember outside of the house, I remember a wall, and I remember stairs, yeah. So that's quite weird. Maybe I was...
That is really weird.
Absolutely, you were right. I do remember when we came around to what was our parents' house now. And again, it's our obsession with toys. The main thing I remember was walking into the room, which would eventually become our room.
Yeah.
And the kid who was sitting there on the floor was playing with a Technique car. Don't really remember much else, but my memory instantly focuses and remembers on the toy that was in the room at the time.
That's really neat.
So I think ever since when we would have been in, so again, we would have been like three or so, my mind has been focused on remember toys, forget other things. It's not important, just remember toys.
So do you think the toys that you all have, as you were going through your your formidable years as kids, did you gravitate towards certain toys because of the nature of the toy itself, or the cartoons and TV shows? What was more important to you all?
I think it was a bit of both. So obviously one of our big loves is Transformers, and I remember watching the cartoons when over here they were shown in like 5 minute segments. Mm-hmm. And it was like split up, and I remember watching it, and we were quite late into getting the toys. So like our first Transformers were these two, which was Hubcap and Cosmos, that we actually got in 1986. And again, they're in okay condition, I suppose. But we were watching the cartoon series before them, and I think with Transformers, it was that kind of two-in-one factor of you've got a vehicle and you've got a robot, so there's two games that you can play. And these were actually our first toys that we got because they're actually our favourite colours. So okay. Dave got the yellow one, which is his favourite colour, and I got the green one, and it's the only reason why our parents probably would have been like, oh, you can have a toy, and so we went for the colours that were our favourite colours. Which, so if it had been a different colour, we would have ended up with different Transformers. But and I think outside of that, certainly watching cartoons when you come home from school, that would have got us interested in like the series and the characters. Mm-hmm. With Transformers and GoBots, and I remember watching GoBots on a black and white television in our parents' room. It was more that kind of robot and kind of alien robot thing. It was just robots are cool and vehicles are cool, so it was just like, mm-hmm. That's really interesting. I want to watch more about it. Some of the other toy lines, I guess we kind of got in through reading comics, and in the UK when Marvel were producing both Action Force, which was G.I. Joe in the States, and the Transformers comics, they had backup strips, which were quite often other lines that would introduce, whether it was Visionaries or eventually they merged them, but that then introduced you to another kind of series, another world, and then you go and look for toys. We were quite fortunate as well. I think I mentioned that probably the last two times I was on that, literally at the end of the road where our parents lived, there was a what we call a car boot sale, so a flea market.
Yes, you did mention that before.
Yeah, and this is going on more to like the mid 80s, and there was a guy there that we still know as the Hasbro Man, and I was actually talking to Dave yesterday, and we still don't know who the person is. He must be in his 70s now, if not his 80s, but we're sure he must have worked for Hasbro, because all he sold were Hasbro product toys. 90% of them were new and sealed. Most of the stock was from the previous 1 or 2 years, which is how we managed, yeah, to pick up a lot of the early Transformers a couple of years later. They were also, what we found out only in like the last 15 years, is they were often like Mexican imports or some of the South American Transformers figures, which you can tell by like the rubber nose cones on the Seekers, whereas like on like a G.I. Joe Action Force side, they were UK carded products. But I think we probably bought our entire Visionaries series from him over the course of probably a couple of months, I guess, of going down there and saving pocket money and then buying toys, because they weren't at retail, they were priced less, and they were all carded, and we've still got those. So I think at that point, some of the toy lines were being able to find things for cheap,
mm-hmm.
and then going, oh, what's this? Go and try to find a cartoon of it if you can. But there was certainly a strong influence of watching a cartoon, not on the television, and then going to the shops to look out for those toys.
Well, and I think that also speaks to the entertainment industry at that point in time, because that is when, a lot of these companies were saying, hey, we can cash in not only on the advertising space, but also, of course, merchandising. And you, I mean, you can see that with Star Wars, you can see that with G.I. Joe, He-Man, Thundercats, you name it. And again, also, if you want to join in on the conversation with myself and Steve, if we're doing this live, you can join us at collectorshangout.tv/live and join in on the chat. We're actually monitoring that. So if you want to have a question that you pose to Steve or Dave, let us know, and we will definitely ask that on air. Now, going to the point that you were making, Steve, about talking to Dave about this gentleman from the flea market, have you guys tried to resurrect, trying to find that individual, you know, using the internet or anything like that?
Well, the hard thing is, all I remember was he had short brown hair, and you're going back 30 years. So it's like... Yeah.
Wanted a man with short brown hair 30 years ago who ran a store at a flea market here. I'm not even sure how we would go about doing it. It would be really nice to have found him, just to have said, like, wow, thank you for buying
people money. I think the best way to do it, and I probably will at some point, and it have to be soon, would be through local newspapers around the area where we're assuming he probably worked and therefore probably lived.
Yeah.
To see if he's still around there, or someone goes, oh yeah, I remember my father or grandfather, or they wouldn't remember the grandpa doing it, but worked for this thing, and you know, maybe he sold bits, because we know, like, the community center where the flea market was, that's still there. Obviously, the people running and staffing it have changed numerous times. Mm-hmm. So whether he remembers it or not, but he was certainly there for a good couple of years, just selling products. And yeah, if it wasn't for him, we wouldn't have had a lot of the stuff that we bought.
Yeah.
So thank you. Thank you, Catherine.
He was a big influence on your life.
Yes. Things would have been very different.
And with the fact that you mentioned getting many of the visionary pieces that you have in the 80s room, I think this would be a good time to talk a little bit about that, Dave. You had mentioned before we went live that you all have some visionaries that, again, were a cartoon back in the 80s that Hasbro initially started. Take it from there and give us a little bit more background on the Visionary universe.
Yeah, so Visionaries is actually a property that was owned by Abraham Entertainment, which Hasbro licensed. So Hasbro didn't actually own, or they paid for the license, but they didn't actually come up with the product.
Okay.
It was a short-lived toy line. It's about 14 figures were produced. Some large playsets of vehicles and carded figures. It had a 13-part cartoon series and a 6-part comic series, which actually ended on part 2 of a 4-part story. So we never know what happened there, which is annoying. But it was a brand or a line which featured holograms on their chest plates and on staffs and then all over the vehicles. And holograms at that time were very, very costly. Control was all through one company, so you had to pay out for licenses to use them. And most of the holograms were designed by a gentleman called Bill Merkline, who was heavily involved in the G.I. Joe toy line, and is a really nice guy to talk to as well. But Visionaries was, it's a short-lived line, but it made quite a big impact on us. That it's one of our favourite toy lines and cartoon series. We run another website on that, and we became heavily interested in looking to collect other items connected to the Visionaries line. The idea being, it was quite small, so there's not really much to get. Mm-hmm. But we've ended up getting a lot of concept art for released vehicles and toys and unreleased vehicles and toys. We have paintings. So behind me up on the top, there's two paintings from VHS cassettes. I've got another one next to me just off screen to the right. We have prototype and engineering figures of released products. We have hard copies of unreleased products as well. And one of the things I'll show in a few minutes is a hard copy for a character that we've never spoken about, has never been reported anywhere previously. A bit of a strange thing. I'll talk to you about the story on that later on. But Visionaries itself as a brand kind of disappeared around 87 or around 86. Disappeared off the face of the earth. And then during the 90s, they thought about maybe bringing it back. It didn't happen. Again, during the 2000s, there was a little bit of a push to maybe restart it again. And that didn't happen. But over the last couple of years, Abrahams Entertainment have been working with Hasbro again on the license to try to bring it back either as a TV series or as a movie. And then I believe it was last year it was announced that Visionaries was part of Hasbro's single universe cinema franchise and that it was indeed going to come back, which is great news for us. I reckon it'll probably be around 2020 by the time they get around to doing Visionaries, but it will be really cool to see what they do with that. Stephen knows a little bit more about the actual history on there.
Yeah, so
let me stop you really quickly. Are you saying Abraham Entertainment? What is the name of the company?
So it's AGE Entertainment. So Abraham's Gentile Entertainment is AGE Limited. They were working with Kodak when they produced the holograms of Visionaries, and when they sold they licensed it out to Hasbro. That money actually helped them set up their company, and they actually went on to design the Nintendo Power Glove. I don't know if you remember that. It's actually one of their products. And they also owned the rights to Micronauts as well, which they sold the IP back to Hasbro in the late 2000s. So they were actually working with Hasbro to try to bring back. So John Gentile and his brother, whose name I just forget, really nice guys. That they remember it, Visionary as well. We spoke to them a couple of years ago. And they've been trying to find a way of bringing it back. Hasbro tried as well. There was a push by NBC Creations to try to bring a comic back in the early 2000s, which didn't get anywhere. They wanted to do a series. Micronauts, say, they licensed that back out to Hasbro, and originally J.J. Abrahams was going to produce a Micronauts movie before he got involved with Star Trek.
Oh, really? Okay.
And it was all actually put on hold, and then obviously he went on to Star Wars as well. So originally there was going to be a Micronauts movie several years ago. It's still in the works. Though now it will be part of the Hasbro Cinematic Universe, along with Mask, G.I. Joe, Visionaries, and ROM. We actually, one of the things we do in our Transformers site is to monitor the USPTO, so the US Patent and Trademark Office website and database, to check for primarily Transformers-related trademarks, but I actually run checks on various properties from the 1980s looking for new applications, and that's discovered various ones on ROM and G.I. Joe and bits like that. A lot of the recent news on the cinematic universe actually came through our website when I discovered the trademark applications, which normally happens within about 2 hours of them being filed.
Okay, so are you crowdsourcing that information, or are you searching it on yourself for, of course, the website?
I have bots that pick up the information from the website, from the USPTO website, and then report it as news for people to then share.
That is really neat. I'll have to make sure that we put information on, you know, that news source feed in the show notes for Collectors Hangout. And then also you had mentioned a Visionaries website. If people wanted to check that out, what is the Visionaries website? And can they get to it from the Transformers website, or is it...
It's available through all our different sites. The website address is thevisionaries.net.
Thevisionaries.net, okay.
And we've had it for about 10 years or so. You'll get sort of images and items like this. So this is a hard copy 2-up of an unreleased Shield from Series 2. It has markings on it with the original character's name. This is actually from Malator, but it says Elephony on it, which was one of the initial working names. But it's a little bit... This is a resin
Yeah. Marvel so it was it going to originally be that large? That seems okay. Yeah. So they're molding it obviously a larger scale, and then it would be scaled down.
Yeah, it was it's a two up. So much like G.I. Joe, the Visionaries weapons were produced two and a bit times the scale, and then they were shrunk to when they were released. So we actually own about 5 or 6 of the weapons from the season 2 line that was cancelled because it didn't reach the I think it's $100 million requirement to continue for season 2. Uh-huh. And what we've done is the Visionaries done it. Its purpose is basically to archive and preserve the history of the Visionary. So we've been going through from the conception through to today. We have information on there on Visionaries Reborn, which was the kind of internal product name when AG were looking to relaunch Visionaries. They were kind enough to share with us some of their internal documents. And we've also been putting up scans of various designs for, as Dave said, for weapons and vehicles. We're trying to document the whole history from like pre-production, where they went in originally and did a pitch to Hasbro, through to the modern day and what's going on now with trademark applications, through to whatever comes next. So hopefully people can learn more about what was, what would have been, and what could have been, as well as, you know, what will be.
Yeah. Dave, can you hold up the artwork that you were just showing again? Yeah. I didn't have so you on screen.
This is a canvas I had made up from an original painting artwork by an artist called Earl Norum, who worked on, rather known as Big Looker Books, during the 80s. They did some for Transformers, G.I. Joe, Visionaries, and some other lines. Mm-hmm. So we bought a couple of original bits of artwork from him, and then I had one reproduced as a canvas print so I could put it up on my wall. We've got another 3 bits of artwork now, so I'm going to try to get the rest of them done, put it up, sort of, if I can, eventually in order of pages, so I have that story laid out in canvas print.
That's really cool how you had put that up on a canvas. I like that.
This is the one that I was going to try and show you. It's a little bit broken, unfortunately. So it's a bit awkward to see. But it's, in essence, it's a wand. And we got this with some of our Visionaries 2-up weapons.
Uh-huh.
The only thing which was strange about this item is no character for Visionaries has a wand. So we weren't sure what it was from. And it has a marking on it with the serial number of the item, so it's the internal SKU. And a character's name called Mandrakane.
Mandrakane.
It's a bit bizarre. We sort of, okay, I'm not sure what it is, we'll file it away. Then we were speaking to AGE, as Steve said earlier, and they confirmed that Mandrakane was a planned character for Visionaries. Obviously, it never made it. It was going to be an evil wizard. So within the Visionary series, there's this sort of really one main wizard called Merklin, who gave everyone powers.
Mm-hmm.
The idea or the concept was that Merklin was meant to be the good wizard originally, and then Mandrakane was going to be a bad wizard, and he was going to be more of a technomage, so a mixture between magic and technology.
Mm-hmm.
It never came about. We're not sure if the concept was prior to Series 1 or if this was going to be part of a Series 2 process to introduce someone to fight against Merklin.
Well, no, that's not strictly true, because Mandrakane was actually going to be introduced in the second half of Series 1, which was what became the plan for Series 2, because originally Visionaries was meant to run, it was meant to air every day in the US, so it was meant to be a strip series. Mm-hmm. Where there would be a new episode every weekend and repeats during the week. Mm-hmm. But there was a mistake when it was put forward to Sumbo, and instead only 13 episodes were produced, which was actually one of the reasons that they've credited for the sales being less than was produced. And it's actually something that AG weren't happy about at the time, because they had when they went in originally to Hasbro and they pitched the idea, they had this concept of effectively what people know of as the Visionary series is half a series, and then where it would have gone after that, which would have introduced Mandrakane as this techno mage, and the Series 2 Visionaries characters are a lot more kind of technological, certainly on the bad guys side of things. So it definitely would have appeared in the series, and had series two gone ahead, it would have been in that series. But unfortunately, because the toy sales weren't up, much like in Humanoids, it didn't effectively reach the line, so it was cut. So Hasbro can move on to the next product.
The story that is almost unfolding as you guys are telling it to me, like what's jumping into my mind is like this would be like perfect for almost like a documentary type style movie of the day in the life of toy and cartoon creators in the 80s. You know, like all of those types of movies are becoming really popular right now, you know, telling stories of like something that had happened in the 70s or happened in the 80s. And we have these, you know, actors that are willing to portray these characters because it is something that, you know, means something to them because of, you know, something maybe that they had seen in their family or whatever. It sounds like almost the amount of research that you're doing, it would be perfect for writing a screenplay. So you need to like source your fans to put together some really cool and juicy information and make this into a screenplay and sell the rights.
It would certainly be nice. At the moment, our focus is just to try to uncover as much of say the history of Visionaries as we can, and along those lines, if we as you speak to people who work on different lines, like we were talking to David Dan, who was another sculptor who freelanced for Hasbro at the time, and he worked on a couple of hologram designs, but he also sculpted some characters for Inhumanoids, and he was telling us about some of the, like, there's a character, I don't know how much you remember of it, if anything, called Decompose, who was basically like this this kind of skeleton monster where his chest was a rib cage that was just open up. And he sculpted that toy, and he showed us a couple. Well, he's got a picture of the wax model on his website, and it's amazing. And apparently he made two different ones. They were slightly different sizes, and he loved them. It was like they paid for his house. I think
he did a design. It cost however much? An awful lot of money at the time. Hasbro weren't happy, and so they commissioned him to do a second one for the same stupid amount of money. And it was a ridiculous time working mid-80s contracting for Hasbro, because they had so much money due to the success of Transformers and G.I. Joe. They would spend a fortune on R&D to try to build up the next product, the next big thing, the next big thing, the next big thing. And then obviously the bubble burst, the 80s hitting the 90s, and suddenly they had to cut their costs down. Cost of manufacturing went up, I suppose, as well. And a lot of products sort of dropped off to the wayside or didn't get made, things like Tribes, where there's a lot of the toy line was made, but it was a line that never got released.
Yeah, now, since you're bringing up the fact that there was that bubble, does the toy industry attribute a lot of that to the advent of computer gaming and electronic gaming and just that taking it away?
I think it's a mixture of things. You've got economic factors during sort of, I suppose, not the 80s, but the 90s going forward, the cost of manufacturing became more expensive. That's why I got outsourced more to sort of China, moved around. Mm-hmm. But definitely the play factor, the age range, when you see toys during the 80s, the age range that they were released for, maybe say from 4 to 11 or something, was then cut down to 8 to 6. And you look at toy lines now where Hasbro will talk about their target audience being between maybe 4 and 6.
Mm.
It's probably maybe like 8 years ago it would be between 4 and 8.
It's kind of the general erosion of childhood, I suppose. And that technology came through in terms of video games, and then later on computers, internet, mobile phones, as well as fashion. And now that the course of kids wanting to, you know, constantly be doing different things and multitasking, that they're finding new ways to engage with technology, which is why, like, Hasbro, I think, recently, in the last week or so, were talking about how they're investing a lot more in gaming and kind of gamification of products. Because another thing that Trademark, I think I picked up, was an application they made for a handheld 3D scanner, but for children.
Handheld scanner for kids. Okay, interesting. We'll have to see how that makes it into the marketplace. All right, so getting back to, again, featuring some of the 80s toys that you all have, you have this little, in your the bottom left hand of your screen, you have this, Major McDonald. Major McCheese from McDonald's.
Yeah, Mayor McCheese. This is it's from 1984. Again, we must have got it from an actual Happy Meal. I don't remember really ever having Happy Meals. But it's a pullback car. They did a set at the time, and he's probably going to go off the walkers on, but it still works. Off he goes. And as he goes along, he pulls a little wheelie, which is a bit bizarre for a car. It's always random. I always associate McDonald's with coloured pens that we used to get in the 80s. But yeah, we've got our original Mayor McCheese. Still works, which is quite amazing. He sits on a shelf in the glass cabinets with random other toys. So I've got like a random Starcom figure. It's the only Starcom toy we ever had. Never had the vehicle. He's missing his visor, and he basically, because he's got magnetic feet, he'll just sits upside down on one of the lights in the cabinet because of the magnet there, and it's the only figure of that range which we have. there's a couple of we have a couple of mask toys, not so many. So Mask is coming back. IDW just announced they're doing their cartoon or their comic series, and it's going to be part of their new comic group comic series, and it's going to be part of the movie universe. But it's quite interesting actually seeing the different sort of sizes of some of the 80s toys. So you've got the Starcom guy, who's pretty small. He's over here. Mask, and I've got like a Dino Riders figure next to the Mask guy.
Yep.
And you can go up to good old Cobra Commander from G.I. Joe, the 3¾-inch figures. I can kind of see the smaller action figures came back with the Human Alliance line in Transformers. They went for the smaller sort of Soros figures. Then you have like your, I don't know if the class is 6-inch or whatever it was for Thundercats, who's now Sly's anointed off the screen, so I'll put him over here. Little bit, I think Sly's one of the best sculpted toys for me from the 80s. It's an amazing, amazing looking figure. And then you go up even further. In fact, I've got He-Man, but I'll go with Bravestar, who's
off the screen.
And that's the thing is that, I mean, for our podcast listeners, you're talking what I'm guessing from the scale, next to your hand, you're probably looking at about, about 3 inches for the smallest character all the way up to,
well, the Starcom guy,
about 7 inches for the character in the back.
So the Starcom is about an inch.
Yeah, because the Cobra Commander on the left, he's 3¾ inches.
Okay.
So yeah, Brave Star's probably about 8-10 inches, I would have thought, because then you still had the 12-inch kind of G.I. Joe and Action Man figures as well that would have been released. Okay. But yeah, the Starcom got ones were very small.
The camera adds length.
I've got Dungeons and Dragons figures there. Sit in the background because it looks cool. But it was interesting the different sort of sizes that they do. Even now, I suppose you get different toy sizes or toys of different sizes. Generally, a lot of it now seems to be the either 3¾-inch or 6-inch figures when you look at like the Marvel figures.
Mm-hmm. And then they go for the 6-inch figures are becoming very popular.
Yeah, and then there's like Star Wars Black 6-inch. And then they go for the larger 9 or 12-inch figures, which are actually a lot more basic, which seem to be selling a lot better than the 6-inch figures now, probably because they're simpler and kids find them easier to play with. And it's kind of interesting to see, you look at an 80s toy now and we remember them really fondly, and you see Sly, he's got his action figure going with his little
You could put a weapon in that hand also, correct?
Yeah. he's got his little bushwhacker walk.
Yeah.
Oh, yay. But not really that much articulation. He can move his legs and he can move his arms just by that.
Yeah.
He can kind of like rotate in a freaky, I've been possessed way. Then you go to like the newer figure, I mean, even one of the original Action Force figures, so pre-G.I. Joe in the UK, 5-point articulation like the Star Wars toy. So you can move the head, move mm-hmm. the arms and the legs. That was what we had in the 80s. You didn't really get much more than that. You go through late 90s into sort of 2000s and some of the newer G.I. Joe figures, and there's toys by companies like Boss Fight now have amazing articulation, ankle rotations, sometimes fingers and different bits and pieces, which for us as collectors, we love, because it means we can pose them into different places and make them, what we class as, a lot more playable.
Mm-hmm.
Then you look at the actual toy companies, and their better selling figures are these giant 12-inch toys with 5 points of articulation, going back to almost like the 80s style, where kids actually seem to play more, I suppose, or better, however the right way of saying it is, but the less points of articulation seems to be selling better, which is quite...
And I wonder if the people that are getting the toys with more articulation are like the toy photographers, hobbyists, and you know, collectors that are adults and wanting to pose, of course, these action figures. I wonder if that's the areas where those are selling, you know, hottest at this point.
Yeah. It is one of those things where, again, I listen to Hasbro's investor relations webinars because I'm a geek and, you know, what else am I going to do? but it's quite interesting when you listen to that, and now they talk about how adult collectors, so basically 16 plus, makes up between 10 and 20% of their sales demographic now, depending on the line of the toy. Whereas the other kind of 70-80% are the kids, and a lot of the thing I think that those kind of points on that is the simple articulation is because a lot of those toys are aimed at younger children, whereas the kind of 6 to 8 year old who perhaps played with the more articulated figures when they were younger now is kind of has dropped out of that action figure market, so that now they're producing more of the like the video game tie-ins.
Yeah, and that would make a lot of sense when you take a look at what you are seeing in the marketplace, and like you had mentioned earlier with the video games and how toys are, you know, creeping into video games. Like Lego is huge with their, you know, Lego franchise for you know, video games on PlayStation and Xbox.
Yeah, so I actually had a meeting a couple of months ago with the head of Hasbro's Boy Toys. I sat down with him in a coffee shop just to talk about what was going on. And he used to work on the Nerf brand, which is still one of their largest markets. And we were talking about Transformers, we were talking about G.I. Joe, we were talking about My Little Pony, and they were saying how My Little Pony now is a $1 billion brand for Hasbro, so it's one of their biggest properties. It's up there with Star Wars, it's up there with Nerf, and it's also kind of their showcase I think they call it franchise brands. So they've managed to target that now for really young children with simple toys and like baby clothes all the way through to adults, and they've got this aim for like simple action figures, more complicated action figures, then they go to like the dolls, so you got like the horse dolls now, but not like as a horse, but like a Barbie, but it's a horse.
Okay.
That they're working on, and then they're bringing in clothing brands. So it's they're selling like My Little Pony clothing and say video games as well. It was one of their first brands to tie in like a scannable piece on a toy that you could scan with your mobile phone with your app to get that character kind of scanned into a game. A little bit like kind of Skylanders, or to do like unlocks. And because it's been a success, it's effectively that's what they're now going to look at doing for their other lines as well. Certainly the ones that they own, that's the model that they can now go with, because they seem to have conquered say clothing, music as well. So with Transformers now, they've just, I think, recently announced some sort of music collaboration, but they are going to be pushing more down into like apparel, clothing, and that side, and then aiming that more at teenagers and like 20 somethings, basically, try mm-hmm. to get some more money in and to kind of increase the longevity of the line, so that then as those people have children, they will then reintroduce them again and complete the circle. But it's going to be interesting, because any kind of product that comes out now, their strategy, effectively, you see what they're doing with My Little Pony, that's the way that they're going to try to go with everything.
$1 billion, that's impressive. I never would have guessed that the My Little Pony brand was so large for them. Did you actually have a chance to record that conversation, or was that one of the stipulations for him meeting you, is that it couldn't be recorded?
Yeah, basically, no, that couldn't be being recorded, which was a shame. Nice guy, though. Really, really friendly guy. Very passionate. So Hasbro UK get a lot of slack over here, because we're a smaller market, and a lot of fans, especially within the Transformers and Star Wars communities, they want their products, and they see the products coming out in the US, and they go, why aren't they on the shelves over here? Mm-hmm. Well, we are a smaller product. There's only a certain amount of the product they can buy, and they're also relying on buyers. And if people are importing it, then the shops don't want to stock other items, so they just can't bring them in. And they're trying to listen now more to fans, but it is like a two-way street. People do have to realise that the UK and even Europe, it doesn't have the same buying power as the States, and anything which gets imported in still has to pay UK tax, which is why the cost often goes up anyway. Mm-hmm. They're more aware of it, and some of the comments online has actually caused certainly Hasbro UK to actually pull down social media pages, such as various Facebook pages, where they created them to interact with children and get feedback from like the kind of their core audience, but they all they received was like negative posts from basically adult collectors that they just had to go, sorry, we have to just take it offline.
That's a shame, though, because if the adults were being a little bit more respectful and saying, okay, we have to wait a little bit longer, maybe it would of course make it into the country, or they might have I don't know, it's beyond my scope of knowledge, but you would think that they might be able to, Hasbro UK would be able to say, okay, we'll allow so much in, and it would be kind of like a raffle, like you would be able to actually purchase something if you made it into the raffle or something like that.
Yeah. And sometimes it's not down to them, the product just aren't available because they have to buy them through effectively from the US. So if something has sold extremely well, that stock might not, just not be available.
Yeah.
Or it could be a license thing as well. There's so many other business reasons that go into why products are or can or can't be released in stores. It was the same in the 80s, it's the same now. Like in the 80s, not every product was released in the UK or Germany that was released in the US. Sometimes it was down to demand. Sometimes if you take like the USS flag, so from G.I. Joe, the large 7-foot aircraft carrier, that was never going to be released in the UK or Europe. There just wasn't the shelf space for it. I don't know how much you know about the kind of the history of that product, but it was effectively Hasbro putting two fingers up to Mattel and saying, look what we can do.
I did not know that. I mean, I had friends that had the aircraft carrier, and I was never fortunate enough to own it myself, but that thing was large. It was, it took up a good floor space of an American, boy's bedroom. So it was not, I don't even remember how large the box was, but I'm sure it wasn't small by any chance.
Yeah, but the toy was 7 feet long.
The what?
The toy itself was 7 feet long.
7 feet long, okay.
So yeah. You can't imagine that now. Just the pure cost of building it would be ridiculous.
Well, that and safety. But because of how well products were selling, like G.I. Joe and Transformers, they basically wanted to make a statement. and it was all about fighting for aisle space, and what better way to take up aisle space and have this huge box that you know, would take a massive amount of room on retail, and that's why they did it. It wasn't even to try to make any money back from it. It was, no, and you know, it says to Mattel, look what we can do. We can put all this R&D in and put out this toy that's going to be ridiculously sized and ridiculously priced. What are you going to do?
and Dave, with ridiculously sized, these are very small planes that fit on a ring. So talk us through these Ring Raiders. And we only have a couple minutes left, so I want to make sure that we showcase everything else that you all want to showcase today.
So yeah, I'll do this quite quickly. We're probably one of the few, maybe the only people who have a collection of Ring Raiders. Just once again, we had them in the 80s. We played with them. When we got a bit older, we put them into an ice cream tub and put them in a cupboard. When we moved in here, we had a shelf space free, so we got them out and put them on display. But yeah, the two on the left are the two leaders, so the bad guy and the good guy. I can't remember any of their names. And then the third one, I just got out because it's got like a squid on it. But they're kind of cool. Just about fit on my fingers, a little bit tight. Kind of hurt a bit. just a bizarre idea that you play with these toys on your fingers to fly around. It doesn't really make a very good sort of like squadron because you're just going to crash into each other.
Yeah.
They go through. So they're not really the Red Arrows or anything, but kind of bizarre. So,
it reminds me a little bit of the skateboard, the finger skateboard that came out in the 90s, I guess it was.
Then you could pretend to be the Mandarin, like load yourself up with loads of rings. Just looking around, something obvious we have around here. We've got Dino Riders. Dinosaurs are another big love of ours, and we have a few Dino Riders. Not a great deal. Again, these are all of our original Dino Riders, and I had some of the. And I haven't had figures out earlier.
In that case, that was actually our sister's.
This is true. That one was our sister's one.
Yeah, I only had one Dino Rider, and that has long been in a dump.
Yeah, what we picked up recently, and one of them we got from a friend of ours, Dave Tree, from all the cool stuff, was some of the Dino Riders Ice Age figures. This one we got from another friend.
We're getting a glare.
This is the giant ground sloth with Ulk, the Neanderthal caveman. And the interesting part, which we had personally for the Dino Riders Ice Age series, is that we didn't really know it existed until a couple of years ago when we saw someone had these Ice Age figures with dinosaurs on it, or humans. We thought, oh, they look a little bit like Dino Riders. Then we noticed it actually said hit Dino Riders. And there's only four of them. A Killer Warthog, Woolly Mammoth, and a Sabertooth Tiger. And then this guy, we've got two out of the four now, and that's the only kind of reason why they're boxed and still sort of sealed. I don't think they're massively worth much money, but they're kind of cool. I like the fact on the top it says museum quality replica. I'm not sure how we'll ask you there.
Museum quality replica, of the sloth, the giant sloth.
But it is interesting because the Dino Riders toys, which were originally by Tyco, the actual dinosaur figures themselves were reused in the Jurassic Park toys later on. We used the same toys in the molds, and there were some figures produced for some museums. I'm not sure the Smithsonian would have maybe got them, but they also reused those molds. So it's quite interesting that Tyco obviously paid for the mold, and then later on, 10, 20 years later, people were still using them later on. I had Bravestar out earlier.
Bravestar.
Sort of the sequel to He-Man in some ways from Mattel. I really like the cartoon series. One of the things about 80s toys and mainly 80s cartoons was they were generally, I'll say they were good. We remember them to be good. Whether they were actually good or not, if you look back at them now, it's probably debatable. But I think
just to interject here, I tried to go back and watch He-Man. I was sorely disappointed.
Yeah.
That was not a good cartoon.
I think, unfortunately, the main thing is remember them being great.
Yes.
And that's the way it should stay. but one of the things which you can't, I think, deny in a lot of 80s cartoons were they had amazing theme tunes. Mm-hmm. Whether it was Visionaries, G.I. Joe, Mask, Brave Star, Pole Position had an amazing cartoon.
Galaxy Rangers.
Yeah, Galaxy Rangers. Pole Position is painful to watch now. Galaxy Rangers is probably a bit better. But they had amazing tunes back then, and I think it's part of that, just the experience of the cartoons and the tune as well, gets you into wanting to buy the toys. And Transformers, the 86 cartoon movie that they did, the soundtrack for that, a rock soundtrack, got our interest in rock music, which is quite funny. So our taste in music ultimately has been determined by toys that we played with, because our whole life is ruled by toys, basically.
One of the interesting things actually with that Brave Star figure is it's not a toy that we bought at the time. We actually only had Tex Hex at the time. He's actually a toy that we bought probably about 10 years ago. So that was a case of us going to a collector's show and buying a toy that we wanted to get when we were kids and we never did.
So yeah.
It was like it's been 20 years or 25 years, whatever it was, and now we finally got that toy.
I mean, in the room which we're in, we've got our original Thundercats, which we're actually looking at probably going to be selling this year. But what I didn't realise until I looked through the Thundercats figures is that I knew we had quite a few, but there's only about four that we didn't actually get. And then I had that collector's mentality. Oh, there's only four others. Maybe I should just get my other four, and then look to like we get some of the weapons and things that we're missing.
Yeah.
There's something about that collector's addiction thing of as soon as you realise that you're like, oh, maybe. but yeah, we've got so many different lines: Rock Lords, GoBots, Dino Riders, Thundercats, GI Joe, Action Force, some of the Star Wars bits, which were all our original toys from growing up.
Mm-hmm.
And then we've got others like the Turtles. We bought some of the new Turtles figures because we had some Turtle toys when we grew up, played with through the 90s, early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, but we got rid of them. And so when we moved, we were like, I like Turtles. I wouldn't really want to get another line. There's only so much space you've got and only so much money you've got.
Mm-hmm.
And it does become a bit ridiculous. The whole age just become a closet hoarder. So we bought the four Turtles, Bebop and Rocksteady, and they kind of represent the Turtles for us. So we can look at them and go, yeah, part of our childhood. For Star Wars, we've basically got like a mini collection of Stormtroopers and a couple of Star Wars Black figures. And for us, really, that just represents our Star Wars for us. We don't need many more. There's too many Star Wars toys to get. We've got a couple of like the Action Fleet vehicles, but as long as there's something there to represent bits on, I'm happy enough with that.
Yeah, and with being the fact that we're at the top of the hour, I want to go ahead and wrap it up. So with the 80s toys that you all have and the fact that you had mentioned that you might be liquidating some of your collection of the Thundercats, have you documented and put up pictures that we can, of course, share of the 80s toys specifically? Because obviously we can point to the Transformers and, of course, the Visionaries, but have you cataloged the 80s toys that you have and put them up somewhere that, some people might not necessarily know?
To be honest, they certainly haven't all been documented, much like our Transformers, which is probably about three quarters of three. Those are probably even less. There'll be pictures on our Google Plus account. Most recently, you'll find images on our Instagram account, which is, again, I think it's Transformer Toys, which you would have thought would have been more Transformers, but we basically take pictures of whatever toys happen to be around at the time. And that's where we'll probably end up sharing most of the images of various toys will be through Instagram and Twitter.
Okay, very good. Well, what we'll do is we'll definitely put all of those links, of course, to connect with the Transformers and Visionaries within, of course, the show notes. And I really want to thank you both for coming on Collectors Hangout again. Is there anything that you all would like to leave if you guys are, throwing it out to the interwebs on what you're looking at collecting or looking to, you know, liquidate from the collection right now?
In terms of what we're looking for, if anybody has any more material or information on Visionaries, always interested. Doesn't matter. Okay. It could be a scrap of paper from a meeting with a note on it. Doesn't matter how small it is. What we're looking to do with the Visionaries is to archive and preserve the history of that brand, and to help highlight some of the work that went into designing it, as well as the people who created that series and that world.
Very cool. Well, we'll definitely put that out there as well. And what about you, David? Any closing thoughts on your part?
Yeah, I mean, the Visionaries really is the main sort of thing that we're looking at getting. I wouldn't mind getting a couple of other Ice Age figures at some stage from Dino Riders and maybe the Brontosaurus. But really, yeah, Visionaries is the main thing. Even over Transformers now, we're trying to do some research, a bit like the Parallel and Honor Foundation do with Masters of the Universe, just to try to get all the information together in one place. To work out an actual product timeline from when they started the initial concept to when it got released. And then hopefully maybe if we can get enough information together, then we may look at trying to do like a coffee table book or something to get it out into people's houses so they can have a look and read through.
Very cool. Well, if you guys end up doing a crowdfunding campaign to get that launched, definitely let us know and we will put it out to, of course, all our followers, and we'll definitely help to fund that.
Excellent.
Awesome.
Thank you, Domingo.
Very good. Well, thanks again for joining us, for all of you that have watched live. And again, Collectors Hangout is totally supported by you, our viewer and listener. So definitely, if you're interested in what we're doing here at Collectors Hangout, go to collectorshangout.tv/support, and you can look at ways to support us. And if you would like to, of course, come on our show, definitely come back and let us know, and you know, list what you would be interested in showcasing in the comments section for this episode. So until next time, happy collecting, and thanks again.
Thanks again for listening to this episode of Collectors Hangout. Be sure to sign up for our newsletter at collectorshangout.tv. Also, if you'd like to view the entire archive of past shows and podcasts, along with links to the areas mentioned during the show, go to collectorshangout.tv/ASAP. That stands for all shows and podcasts. If you'd like to join us while we're streaming, go to collectorshangout.tv/schedule to see when you can join us live. If you'd like to be on the show yourself or know of a collector that you think we should feature, let us know that as well in this episode's comments section. Now, please follow us on Google+, Twitter, Facebook, and of course YouTube. Please plus one, like, share, and comment to keep spreading the word if you like what we're doing here. Thanks again for listening, and remember, if it's heavy, then it's expensive, so don't touch a thing.